Wednesday edition, Wednesday, October 4th. Thanks very much for tuning in. A lot to talk about today. Frank Sennett will be along a little bit later to talk about what's going on in Cranes. He has an interesting drug story when it comes to challenges from generics and how the established big pharma fights that off. So we'll talk to Frank about that. Later in the second half hour, too, the people behind Spotlight, they want to be the new way you find the hot spot in Chicago, whether you're looking for a college bar to watch a game or a fish fry or whatever. Spotlight, they say, is the way to go. So we'll talk to them about that. But we always start on Wednesdays with Terry Savage, a personal finance expert, and she joins us now in the studio. Terry, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Always glad to be here.
So President Trump is in Las Vegas today. He's meeting with some survivors, I'm assuming, and I know first responders as well. Yesterday, it's kind of an unfortunate tour, but yesterday he was in Puerto Rico, and it didn't go perfectly. The optics weren't great. I don't know if you saw him shooting out the paper towel rolls.
It was like at a Bulls game when they throw T-shirts into the audience.
But, you know, he went down there. That's sort of not his forte. But then he said a couple of things sort of unfortunate.
We stick to financial. I know.
So I'm saying, but then one thing he said that's having a real impact today is he sort of waved his hand and said, we're going to get rid of your debt. We got to do something about the debt here. I don't know if Goldman Sachs has it, but we got to take care of that.
He said it should be wiped out. Now, I'm going to say something, and then I'll go on and talk about the financials. What are the two things, if you never knew who Donald Trump was before the election campaign, that the average ordinary person would sort of off the cuff, you know, a year, 2 years ago, know about him? Number one, he went bankrupt and stiffed all of the major lenders on his, several of his casino projects, I mean, twice in a row in the early 90s, or late 80s, I guess it was, and again later on. Because he was too big to fail, they lent him money, sort of. They kept him going and reduced his interest, but they kept his name on them. And so he has a history of understanding how to wipe out debt, number one. And number two, the other thing most people would have known was, you're fired. He also has a history of just capriciously or not capriciously firing people. And what have we seen? We're now seeing what he does best, which is those two things that people should have known when they elected him. Now, first of all, the president cannot unilaterally wipe out debt.
What is the debt? How much is it? Why is it there?
It's $72
billion.
Okay. There's higher quality debt, which yesterday or 3 days ago was trading about 50 cents, 52, 3 cents on the dollar, now trading at 36 cents on the dollar.
So it took a big hit.
You remember, sidebar, we've talked about the risks in bonds. One of the risks is the credit quality diminishes. They've already been in financial trouble in Puerto Rico, and that's we've talked about that on this show. And the other is that interest rates would go higher. Here you're seeing diminution of credit quality, and you're seeing the impact of this statement. Now, nobody that I've read thinks the president can unilaterally wipe out the debt of Puerto Rico. But the very fact that that's the way his administration might be thinking was enough to make people say, I don't want to own these bonds. Now, okay, who do you think? Hedge funds? You think they own the most of them? They're speculative. They've already had their financial problems. It turns out that 75% of the higher quality debt, that most of the lower quality debt that's already trading at 2 cents on the dollar, is owned by the poor people of Puerto Rico. They bought them. They're not selling because, A, there's nothing left to sell, and B, there's no electronics or market for them to sell.
Sure.
So the basic vast majority of Puerto Rico's debt, and by the way, it has a debt ratio so much larger, they're not a state, but so much larger than any state. They have a huge percentage of their economy is debt, which they haven't been able to surface, and they've delayed and so forth. But who's it owned by? If you have an Oppenheimer bond fund in your 401k, if you have a Franklin Templeton bond fund.
Whoa, Nelly, I've got one of those.
Okay, 75% of the debt is either owned by individuals, not on the mainland, or by bond funds. It's astounding. So
when the president says we're going to wipe away this debt.
Well, he can't unilaterally do that.
But it's having an impact on the market today.
I mean, because who wants to own something that the president is aiming at? You know, this was
unfortunately,
let me just say this was totally irresponsible from a financial point of view and leave it at that. Aside from being, let me not go there. It was idiotic.
I'm sorry.
But it was irresponsible financially.
I'm sorry y'all couldn't be with me for the last half hour because Terry's been engaged in a self-wrestling match.
Yes, I said I'm going to just try and be calm about this. But you see, the point is that these words do matter. And they matter to a lot of people who are planning to retire and take required minimum distributions from and who sought safety in managed bond funds from excellent companies who thought, whoa, well, we get some nice yield out of these Puerto Rican bonds, and they are general obligations. I mean, they aren't going to be wiped out. Puerto Rico will be, I mean, before the hurricane,
right.
People were thinking
right.
Puerto Rico will figure its way out. And no, now there's a great fear
okay.
of the debt being wiped out in some way with the administration.
Let's move on to maybe happier figures.
Please do.
Explain for me the ISM non-manufacturing index, the non-manufacturing economic activity in September beat expectations, the highest it's been, I think, in 10 years. Why is that important?
Well, the service sector is now a good half of our economy. So, but the issue within that issue is, so we're always glad to see any part of the economy do well. The question is, and I haven't seen the breakout, of what segments of the service economy are doing well. So if you're talking about expensive services like medical services or physical therapists or x-ray machines or MRI, I mean, things like that, those are healthcare services.
Mm-hmm.
They're highly paid. They're highly skilled. They are, you know, the people that do them have reasonably good wages. That's fine. If you default to what's commonly thought of the service sector of the economy as fast food workers, maybe it's not so good that they're, you know, that everybody's been driven into those jobs. But the real interesting point of the service sector is, guess who's making a lot of money doing things and are in great demand that you never thought of as highly paid jobs? But go find a plumber, go find an electrician, go find someone to remodel your bathroom or so forth. All of a sudden, skills, trade skills, which are also part of the service sector, are in great demand, and prices are going up for those jobs. So if your son or daughter isn't doing well in school at advanced math and whatever else, or decides that it would be better, instead of getting a fine arts degree, to maybe
there
have
a
trade
way.
Position,
there's
an opportunity to make some money.
If your son or daughter is doing well at math and is applying to colleges, Terry Savage has some advice for you as well. We'll talk about that.
Oh, it's FAFSA time.
No one likes to hear that. That's the worst phrase ever.
It's $150 billion worth of money, and I'm going to show you how to get it, but you cannot procrastinate.
Terry Savage is in the studio. You think I wouldn't have had a college degree.
Oh, Steve, we know that you are so smart that you play naive
right.
to get me to go out on a limb all
so
the time. Here
I
we
don't
go.
Do. I wouldn't do that
well,
to you.
Don't you have a child starting college soon?
I have one. I have one who's a sophomore and one who's going to graduate early in December.
Okay, so Freedom Day.
How about
Freedom
that,
Day
man? All my
sooner.
Life, all their lives, I kept saying four years.
And me too. I drove my son to the airport saying 4 years and not I switched majors, so I need not 4 years and I dropped a course, so I need not, you know,
so
4 years.
So Emma, God bless her, is going to do it in 3.5.
She gets a bonus, I bet.
Yes,
for the money
a little bit.
You
save. Yes, some of the money. Okay, so FAFSA.
FAFSA. Free, here we go.
I hate it so much
free,
I can't say it.
Free application for federal student aid. And just, you know, this for a dependent student, if you qualify for this aid, just lest you think it pays for your whole college education, it depends on where you go to school, of course, a freshman gets $5,500, sophomore $6,500 max, and juniors and seniors $7,500. So it's not a small amount. And FAFSA is the application form that you fill out that is more intrusive than your tax form or anything else you've ever had to fill out. And it determines, based on the facts you reveal on this, which have to do with your income and all your assets, excluding the family home, excluding your retirement account, excluding the cash value of your life insurance, it determines what your expected family contribution will be. And schools look at both the combination of your FAFSA filing and the expected family EFC contribution and determine how much aid they will give you, both in the form of federal student loans, subsidized loans, which you don't have to pay interest on when you're in school, and perhaps some other grants and work study programs. So FAFSA
okay, let me stipulate
is the core.
Two things, just so they're out of the way. One of the things you just kind of said. But one, it's easier than it used to be, right? Two, well, it is.
Okay, you do it online now, and they automatically import. Let me say two key things. October 1st is the start date, right. not January, right. the way it used to be. So that's why we're talking about it now. And first come, first serve on a lot of aid programs, especially state scholarships. So you want to file right now.
But the other thing I just want to say, Terry, so people okay. know, if you might think, well, I make too much money to qualify for this,
oh, no,
they still
anyway.
use the figures for other scholarship aid.
Other scholarship programs. You really, I don't care how wealthy you are or how high income you are, or how much of a pain this is, go to FAFSA, FAFSA.ed.gov, and start it now. Get your PIN number. You file it online. You don't have to do it all at once. And the part that you said is easier now is they've got their tax retrieval tool up and working so that you will be judged on the basis of the income you reported on the return you filed last April 15th, which was for year-end 2016 now, okay? If something's changed in your family, you have to let them know. But basically, to get the FAFSA started, they will retrieve your tax information from your most recent tax return.
They ask you maybe to list some of your likely schools if you're an incoming freshman. Why is it important to list the state schools first?
Oh, because the state schools may have earlier deadlines, and because they give money out on a first-come, first-served basis, then they may run out. And because I am told that the state school administrators take a great pride to see that you applied to XYZ state before you applied to a private school. So they're subliminally
matters.
Likely to give you more financial aid, I am told.
Okay. And so if you're the owner of a college or a high school senior right now, moving toward your choice, maybe the choice isn't even made of schools, you still have to fill out this form now.
Exactly. You should list the schools, even the ones you're planning to apply for. You can list a whole bunch of them. List your state school first, just as a matter of giving you a teeny bit of an edge. You may not apply to all of them, but put the schools on there. The other thing is people get confused. What income? I mean, they're taking the income from your tax return. I want to tell you, if you have juniors in high school and you have custodial UGMA accounts, you want to take that money and, I'm going to use a good word, repurpose it now in your junior year so that this time next year when you're filing FAFSA, it doesn't show up as a student asset. Custodial accounts, not 529s, custodial accounts are considered an asset of a student and weigh far more heavily against you in the financial aid formula. The 529 is considered a parental asset.
How about if you are a kid in a divorced household?
Boy, there's a column up at terrysavage.com. This is really complicated. If your parents are still single, I should say, and not remarried, then you are the dependent.
My kids think I'm simple.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they do. Yeah. No, they couldn't possibly. You're too complex. All right. If you are the child of, if you're divorced and have not remarried, then the parent who provides the most support or the custodial parent is the one whose financial information you have to use. Yes, I know that causes problems. How about a worse problem? You're remarried. Your ex-spouse is responsible for college, supposedly, et cetera, et cetera. But your new spouse is very successful. Good job marrying someone more successful. That new spouse's income, because the child is living with you,
right.
will be counted and work against you in getting financial aid. Tell that to your ex, who's going to have to come up with more
okay,
money.
Okay, parents, you know how you tell your kids, just go do the chore. You'll feel better when it's over. Just start working okay. on it. It's time for work on
FAFSA. FAFSA.ed.gov. You can start now. October 1st was the opening date. Sign up, get your PIN, start filling it out. Once you get into it, you'll understand it. And then remember, every year you apply for aid, you're going to have to do it again.
And read more at terrysavage.com.
Yep.
Frank Sennett comes from Crane Chicago Business, joins us on Wednesday afternoons, and he's on a phone line this afternoon. Frank, I almost called you Crane. Frank, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve.
How are you? Everything's going well, I hope.
I'm loving the rotation for the playoffs that Joe Maddon set up for the Washington series.
So you like Kyle Hendricks starting first and then John Lester? You're good with that?
Yeah, I mean, Kyle is calm, cool, and collected, and I think he's like the second coming of Greg Maddux.
Unflappable. So, but no Jose Quintana? You didn't think he'd be up there closer?
No, I think that Joe being Joe, he's going to go with, you know, who's done well for him in the past. And, you know, Quintana in number three slot isn't bad. Lester's a big game pitcher. I think it's a great rotation. And with Arrieta being injured, to have him be fourth makes sense.
All right, let's jump into this Greg Hines piece on the census data, because it is fascinating to me in so many ways. So it shows that the Chicago population is getting smarter and becoming more wealthy. Now, if you look at the numbers, Some of that has to do with people coming in. A lot of it has to do with people going out as well. So break this down for me. Tell me a little bit about this piece.
Yeah, it's really more complex than that headline. I agree. What you're seeing is a rising number of educated folks coming into the city, white, Asian, and African-American. There's an influx of middle-class African-Americans, but it's not offsetting the outflux or the outflow of lower-income African-Americans from the city, which some demographers are saying is just astonishing, the number of low-income black folks who are leaving the city of Chicago. So we're seeing like almost a gentrification of the entire city in some ways. And it is reflected in a higher average income and higher education rates, but it has some very serious implications for the identity of the city, for municipal planning, what's at the heart and soul of Chicago.
A line from Greg Story: if you are an African-American resident of the city without a college education, the data shows that you have a good chance of choosing to leave and joining an astounding exodus of blacks. I think that's a quote from an expert in there. Yeah.
Right. 42,000 low-income African-Americans left just last year.
And where are they going?
We've seen over the years a lot of the collar suburbs, close-in suburbs are getting some of the population, and beyond that, I don't know.
Some statistics again. A greater share of adults in the once blue-collar Chicago now hold degrees. How many people, what percentage out there, listeners, do you think hold college degrees, Chicago residents? Okay, time's up, I'll tell you. 38.5%. New York City, the number is 37%. Across the U.S., the number is 31.3%. So if you are a resident of Chicago, you are more likely than the rest of the country to have a college degree.
And, it used to be the big demographic that was in that mix. They called them lakefront liberals. It was always, on the lake, on the north shore. And now it's all around the city. So the lakefront liberals have kind of won out, as it looks like.
That's a lot of people's worst nightmare. They're finding their way west.
Yeah, where's the Grabowskis to battle that?
Right? Okay, so you just said that about the identity of the city. Where are the Grabowskis? I mean, what does this mean? Because I think I read in the piece where they said the numbers don't look at Cook County, but the assumption is that they're fairly reflective of Cook County. So that would put in dispute the idea that these poor people who are leaving the city are moving close in. I suspect they probably are. But, I'm thinking of Paris, where Paris has their low income populations are in the suburbs, aren't they?
Right. They're ringed in public housing projects around the city. And there have been some real issues with that. And I think, Chicago could potentially be going down that path. That's a good analogy, I think.
Thank you. It's fascinating. It's a Greg Hines piece. You should check it out. Look at the numbers, because it is one of those things where it's certainly good news on the surface and maybe good news below the surface, too. But just not the way you might expect. But I'm fascinated as well with the changes in the city, and I'm convinced that we are in the next 10 or 15, maybe 20 years, going to have a sub-downtown just to the northwest of downtown. Tribune Media announced today these plans for redeveloping the Pioneer Center, the Freedom Center, I should say, where the printing press is there. I think I'm going to say it's around Grand and Halsted, a little north of that. And that's just south of this North Branch redevelopment that we've talked about quite a bit. It may or may not one day be the home of Amazon, but either way, it seems as if we're going to sort of transfigure the city and move a lot of the hipness up to the north and west.
That's right. I worked for several years in the 90s overlooking Halsted in Chicago, and there was a Byron's Hot Dogs down the street. It was near Cabrini Green.
Yeah.
That place is completely transformed. Ward's left, obviously. It went out of business. And, Groupon hasn't lived up to its promise in some ways, but it is headquartered right there in one of the old Ward's buildings across the Chicago River to the east. And it was kind of a harbinger of this new hip development that's coming in. Tribune is going to, file the plans today for transforming its Freedom Center printing plant and all those parking lots there on the Chicago River into a really huge development, mixed-use offices and high-end residential so people can live and work there. A new street east of Halstead, between Halstead and the river, arterial between Chicago and Grand Avenue. So, yeah, they're talking thousands, tens of thousands of jobs in there. Big development, they say, like San Francisco, like in the tech sector. And then, of course, we've been talking a lot about further north on the north branch of the river, all of the changes that are coming there. It looks like that river area is going to be completely transformed. And with the Riverwalk, I think Rahm Emanuel is going to leave office known as the River Mayor.
Right, because they want to put a river walk up there. And so we could see development from Grand north to Fullerton all along the Chicago River.
Yeah, it's going to be an amazing transformation in our lifetime from, you know, a lot of it was fenced off. You couldn't even see it. You know, the Morton Salt Plant, industrial uses, you know, city municipal where they park the dump trucks and the garbage trucks. And, you know, now it's going to be these gleaming you know, centers of commerce and residential. It's kind of a crazy transformation. It's happening very fast. It's like a gold rush.
All right. I talked to Andrew Herman about this last week, and we're really almost out of time, but I want to know what you think. I mean, does this positive development come to the detriment of downtown, to the Loop? I mean, are we going to see the Loop suffer because of the growth outside the Loop?
Not if we get Amazon.
Because it would all be Amazon.
I mean, because there's plenty of other businesses around it. You know, with Amazon, we're already going to be bursting at capacity. We're going to need this extra stuff. But yeah, without Amazon, there is going to be a competition, and it'll be good for people looking for, you know, good deals on business office space and that kind of stuff. It'll take a while. It's like the hotel overbuild that we've seen.
Right.
You're going to be over capacity for a while. It'll be good for people getting in at lower rates. Over time, you know, we'd have to grow into it. But if we get Amazon, hey, I think there's room for this in downtown's fine.
That's Frank Sennett. Read more at chicagobusiness.com. Frank, great to talk to you again. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, we're going to jump right into this. Kevin Zeblik and Dan Trainer are in the studio, and they're the guys behind Spotlight and the theory. Well, I'm not going to tell them the theory. Dan, you tell us the theory.
Sure. Thanks, Steve. So basically, Kevin and I are two locals here from the Chicago area, grew up here our whole life. And while there's a ton of great services online and ways to find information on bars and restaurants, what we started thinking one day, and I worked here actually pretty close to the building here a couple years ago, and always had an issue just going outside and finding a place to go that might have a good happy hour or special.
Right.
So what ended up happening was we'd always go to the same spot.
When there might have been a great spot just around the corner.
Exactly right. And then one of the first things you think of is, you know, where's there a good deal? Maybe I can try something great. And so I would go online, and it was really hard to find something. So with that concept in mind, we thought, how can we pull together this information for our users, make it very easy to find happy hours, daily specials, top spots, et cetera. And so that's kind of how the concept started.
So Kevin walked in the studio and he says, you know, Steve, you might be in the mood for a Bloody Mary. And I'm thinking, well, wow, you should go into fortune telling.
Yeah. So we actually developed this feature where you could actually search by an item. Whereas in a lot of these places are strictly, you know, search by a day of the week or a certain location. You know, sometimes you wake up for a hankering for a Bloody Mary on a Sunday and you go, you know, I want to find a Bloody Mary on a Sunday at 9 a.m. And we have the ability with the search by item feature of our site where you can actually do that.
So it's got your location. You registered your location on your phone, and it's going to it'll say here are some spots known for Bloody Marys within a mile of your house.
Technically, so yeah, what we've done is with your user profile, so when a user goes to spotlightspecials.com and signs up for their profile, you actually can go through a series of selecting your favorite items. And based off your favorite items, we have an algorithm that will actually take your favorite items and give you recommended places around you.
Now, a lot of people are into college football, which is weird to me. Mm-hmm. I'm college basketball. And so when Marquette season starts, I might want to find a Marquette bar where I can watch the game. Mm-hmm. I can use you guys for that?
Yes, actually, great question. So that's another feature of ours, which is called the Top Spots section. And we have right now about 25 different categories, from best live music venues to best barbecue to even college-affiliated bars.
Right.
And so you can go in there and you can filter by city or your area, and again, it'll show you the closest places to you that support Marquette basketball.
So one of the things I'm really excited to talk to you guys about is because you're two entrepreneurs who are starting a new business, and you're at the point where you've just jumped out of the plane. Your parachute's not really even open yet.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So the website is up.
Yeah.
The app is coming up very quickly. When do we see the app?
Tomorrow. So
tomorrow.
It's going on the iTunes store this week. We get notifications that it should be live by tomorrow to download. We'll have a link on our website as well of spotlightspecials.com.
And it's spotlight, S-P-O-T-L-Y-T-E.
specials.com.
Okay. Correct. Right. And it'll be on the iOS store first, mm-hmm. and then in a few months, we're going to release the Android version.
Okay, so you guys have known each other for 10 years or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've had a few ideas together.
Yes. But this, so not so good.
This is, give me your worst one.
I don't know if it was our worst, but we had a recipe. It was called What's My Recipe? .com, and we were going to use that, and basically you could gather any ingredient from your fridge and find
a
recipe on
that,
but we didn't really follow through on that too.
No, this one just kind of filled a need. You know, when I was in Arizona a couple of years ago, I was texting them. I'm like, I don't know where to go. I need something to drink. I want something to do. I want a patio. I want live music, and I want to find a good deal.
Right.
And that was kind of dawned on us, like, why don't we make that? Because there's nothing else like that. Our competitors don't do that.
If I'm going for dinner, we'll look at Open Table sometimes, but that only is looking at restaurants that participate with Open Table.
Correct.
Yep.
And it's more limited. And so, okay, so good luck tomorrow.
Okay.
I hope you get a big following, which you need, because one day you're going to have to make some money on this.
Absolutely.
Yep. Have you figured out how you're going to make money on it?
Yeah. So we have some advertising spots on our website. We have web banners. The promotions that we're going to be listing. We've got a map feature, so you can actually search by the city of Chicago, and it'll actually, we have the ability to like place you on a certain map and stuff like that. So.
Spotlight.com.
Spotlight Specials.
Thank you. Spotlight Specials.com. And search for the app. It'll be up tomorrow.
Yep.
All right, great. You guys, great to meet you. You got great energy about you. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much. Great to be here. Appreciate it.
Keep us posted. Come back after a while. Let me know how it's going.
Absolutely.
Absolutely will. Thank you so much.
It's the WinTrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.